KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are you still looking for a way to fit KBOO into your year-end giving? KBOO is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. For the last 14 years, Give Guide has raised over $28 million for hundreds of local nonprofits. Support KBOO and learn more about Give Guide by going to kboo.fm/give. Remember, we have a one-to-one match for all new and increasing donations, too. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hello, Jamie.
Hey, Amanda.
How's it going?
It's another day in paradise.
Yeah, I bet. Tonight, we're here with Koya Crespin, with the Community Alliance of Tenants Labor Union, and AJ Mendoza of the Communication Workers of America Local 7901, with which the CAT Labor Union is affiliated. Union busting at the Community Alliance of Tenants, a weird concept. A respected membership organization dedicated to organizing for renters' rights on the side of working class renters against abusive landlords has paid for one of the worst corporate union busters in town. Koya, could you tell us what's going on there? CAT's been without a unionized workforce for decades. Now in the last few months, you've organized and are confronted with a union buster. What's that been like?
As you can imagine, it's been pretty terrible. As a community organizer, and like a lot of us, I organize in the community that I struggle in and that I want to make better. And so to work for an organization that is actively participating in this is really disheartening, and it really, you know, took the wind out of me. It was, it kind of made me depressed. Like, you go through all these feelings of just being sad because I put a lot of myself in my work. I feel like I do speak for the rest of the union when I say, like, we are really sad that we're in this situation.
So tell us why did you unionize in the first place? What are you asking for? What are you looking for at the bargaining table?
I mean, definitely we're unionizing because it's just consistent with our values. Like, we are an organization that stands beside other workers and fights for workers' rights and acknowledges these intersectionalities in between the tenant union and the labor rights, the tenant rights movement and the labor rights movement. We organize because I feel like it's a very important part of my legacy as an organizer, and what I'd like to hand on to the next generation of organizers is a solid foundation in labor rights.
Would you like to add anything in there, AJ?
Koya and the workers in CLUE are representative of a larger, like, wave of nonprofit organizing. And I think while the involvement of Union Busters at this point is really, like, can't underscore how hard that has been. That we're at the point now where there are workers in this kind of sector that has survived off of the motif of, like, progressive, like, here's our deliverables that show, like, why we are much better, or, like, and this is, like, a calling to question and a making who we say we are consistent, and, like, making up for that dissonance that exists and that has come to exist. It takes a lot of skin in the game, and it takes a lot of courage, and I'm seeing that repeated again and again. Workers from CASA of Oregon, workers from CAT, workers from Beneficial State Bank, this really holding who we say we are to being true in real terms.
Can you tell us the story of how you got union recognition, and then what happened?
What we thought was going to be a simple process, because I think all of us had this idea that it would be easy, and because we felt like the intersectionalities of labor rights and tenants' rights were so strong. I think we went into it feeling a little bit naive, and we quickly got voluntary recognition. And then shortly after, we did hear that Baron Liebman had came on to become Kat's lawyer and represent Kat through the process, and it was very shocking for us. It's kind of like those stages of grief that they talk about. I think it was really personal for us. And then we kind of went into planning mode to try to figure out what would be the best way to make sure that our values shone through, and that the values of our members that we organize with every day were able to be heard. And, you know, I just was imagining in our heads, I think all of us were kind of imagining the conversations we would be having with tenant leaders, and the conversations I'm having with tenant leaders is just the amount of disappointment. And I think that took up a lot of space for us, to be honest. And then we put out a statement to the effect of how disappointed we were, and how the things we'd been hearing from tenant leaders about Baron Liebman coming on, and how notorious of a union busting despicable firm that they are, not for the people, not for what CAT stands for. And that moment of hypocrisy that we as community workers and as people who stand forward facing and are held accountable to this community could not stand for. And that's what that statement I mentioned kind of encapsulated. And then the DSA, which I'm sure you'll talk more about, Jamie, has put out a petition that CAT membership will be able to have their voices heard through. So that's kind of like a timeline of where we've gone, a timeline of emotions, where we've gone from.
So Koya, the board at CAT made the decision to bring on the union busting lawyers?
I don't know where those decisions come from. I feel like they didn't come from membership, and they didn't come from Clue, obviously. I feel like there's management, and we have a board of directors and a board president, and they're the ones who lead. They're the ones.
It's very interesting where the idea could have come from to do this when you were voluntarily recognized. That blows my mind. But
I feel like that's pretty strategic also. Like, that's a nice way to say, like, oh, we are what we say we are, you know? But I feel like they didn't expect us to have the chops to stand up or something like that. I'm not sure. Maybe, yeah, I can pass off to AJ a bit, but I feel like that was felt calculated. It feels manipulative to me.
And AJ, if I could interject, you've also dealt with other nonprofits that have voluntarily recognized and then maybe become a little more difficult to deal with?
I can say that we have, that might be true of a couple of other shops, but nothing to the level of this kind of a move. It is hard for me to emphasize how different this feels, and how unadjusted how to fight unions and nonprofits looks like. I mean, it takes, but looking back to the CSE campaign to organize the Union for Sustainable Economy, where Bullard themselves initiated a fake out drop Bullard move. So these firms are evolving in the level of psychological manipulation, I would say, that they are willing to go to, and that they're cognizant of how to manipulate.
Wow.
So
that's wild. I was part of a nonprofit or a member of a nonprofit where the board hired a lawyer to deal with the union because they didn't feel competent, you know, that they needed some labor relations help at the bargaining table. And of course, the firm turned out to be, you know, similar union busting firm. And I suppose they expected the workers not to figure that out.
They didn't hire Kathy Hyatt, huh?
No. So could I ask, Koya, what are the demands or the positions, you know, around wages, hours, working conditions, scheduling, benefits that you are attempting to gain at the bargaining table?
Oh gosh, we haven't even gotten past the ground rules yet. We're still bargaining ground rules. That's how tough Baron Lehman is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've dealt with that sort of management that takes all of your bargaining allotted time to do nothing.
Yeah. Yes, it does feel strategic, and in a time when and just with the knowledge, I just want to put out there in case people don't know, but lots of people do know me, and I'm a single mother. I have three children. I work really hard in the community. Because I really love, I love being out here, you know? But it is time that takes away from my children and from being able to spend time with them. And when my time is being wasted, my unaccounted, unpaid time is being wasted, it hits my family even, it hits my family harder.
Mm-hmm. If you just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Koya Crespin of the Community Alliance of Tenants Labor Union and AJ Mendoza of the Communication Workers of America Local 7901, talking about union busting at the Community Alliance of Tenants.
So, in the world of nonprofits, we're all expected to work extra hours, like you were just saying, and you know, kind of do away with the compensation. Why do you think so many nonprofits are now deciding that unionizing is the way to go? What's the tipping point where they realize that they don't need to give away their time the way they have been? Did something happen that I don't know, for me in a shop that wasn't unionized, it was, you know, I've been screwed over on my schedule so many times, I'm not going to take it anymore. Were those the kind of things that were happening, or seniority being violated, that those kind of things?
I don't know if I can talk about
the nonprofit sector generally is just not paid at the market rate. It is, there's this culture of, generally speaking, like a take one for the team. And eventually it just means everyone is just taking one, and then everyone's taking two, and then so on and so forth. And you get to this horrific point where, like, it is not a standard in nonprofits that a COLA is there. So there is, in real terms, like, nonprofit workers that are asked to take a pay cut every year because their wages don't even keep up with inflation. Which is just so, it feels so wrong, because the people, well, nobody deserves to live in poverty. Like, that's just, I'll put that out there. But it is, it's so hard when there's people that have that good urge to want to help, that, like, are passionate about something that's bigger than themselves, and that is what is taken and ran with and abused. And that there is, I think it's just gotten to the point where someone's got to give, and that moment is kind of, and seeing somebody else do it, like, seeing that that's possible, is also the different moment than we were at, like, 10 years ago. Yeah.
Well, I'm somebody that's been in this, you know, social justice movement for about 50 years in this town, and I watched the Community Alliance of Tenants form, you know, and whatever it was in the 90s, and, you know, it was all volunteer at one point, and like many social justice groups that are a good cause that a lot of people sign up as members and pay their membership dues, they were able to hire staff and overtime a number of staff. But there's always been a culture that, you know, if it's not a for-profit business, nobody's making, there's no capitalist that's making big bucks off of the workers' labor. It's, you know, members' dues that keep the nonprofit in business. So people should take, you know, how can you pay high wages and offer Cadillac benefits when you're taking the members' dues to keep the nonprofit alive? How do you respond to that?
I definitely feel like there's, like, a push to change that culture right now. And that's what we're fighting against as workers, is there's a push to make things this corporate, no feeling, faceless entity, right? And it's, you can even see it in the responses that is being made. I don't know if y'all saw the response that CAT put out today, or CAT management put out today, but you can even see in the responses, it's robotic. There's no feeling to it. And that's what I think. I definitely pride myself, and I take pride in the rest of my union mates at Clue, is that we, through our statement, we were able to be vulnerable because we are able to be vulnerable with our membership. You know, and I think it kind of reminds me of something I always say in organizing, is like, landlords can come evict us out of our housing, but they can't evict us out of our communities, right? So, like, this is similar. Like, you can come and try to kick us out of our union, but we are still going to fight next to each other.
I saw that statement. It sounded really glowing. Recognition of the union, providing fair whatever. Do you want to say anything about what it actually says?
Sounds a little bit like Burgerville.
Right. It's like stock. It's a stock statement, you know.
Yeah, we're a progressive company. We embrace this fully. Ha 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 ha. By the way, here we hired these people.
Yeah, so, it's interesting, the two words that didn't get said in that entire letter.
Yeah.
Baron Liebman.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Baron Liebman? I mean, AJ, you probably know more about them.
I will say that Baron Liebman became familiar with them during the campaign to organize workers at CASA of Oregon, which is an affordable housing nonprofit in Sherwood. And they filed for their NLRB petition.
National Labor Relations Board.
Yes, National Labor Relations Board petition. I think it was 4 days before the NLRB closed, that moment where like all elections were canceled for a hot minute. And in the like high prioritization that the agency was given to be brought back up to full operating speed, that was 188 days from petition being filed to vote happening under the Obama rules. 188 days. And that is where I became familiar with. And it needs to be known that nonprofit workers are being targeted by these people who are like.
Well, Baron Liebman actually brags about it, right, on their website. Union avoidance and decertification.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, Koya, when you were deciding to form a union, had you already contacted CWA, or did you shop around for different unions? How did your affiliation with CWA start?
Gosh, you know, I think for us, it was more of a connection with AJ and being knowledgeable and working with AJ in different spaces. And so just knowing about the expertise that we had right there, I think. And someone that I, as I said, I trust in organizing work and that I've worked with before, and that I think that goes a long way. AJ has a really great reputation in this town. And so, yeah, I think that's more what it was. There wasn't really much of a shop around.
And AJ, I know that you've helped organize other nonprofits. It's kind of a, CWA's kind of become, or your local anyway, 7901 is becoming the go-to union for this type of organizing. How did that come about?
Yes, I've actually, this is the first time I've heard that story, Koya, so thank you. I'm just a little, okay. Okay, organizing nonprofits. I guess what I've only ever been a union member in the context of working at a nonprofit. First, when I started at Basic Rights Oregon in 2015, and then J with J 2017.
What's J with J?
Portland Jobs and Justice in 2017. And I was like, why did no one ever tell me about this before? Like this whole like world of like not being afraid of like a boss like who just had it out for me, like that would be my end. Like that I didn't have to, like there was a path that was like found power amongst coworkers. It was just mind blowing, and it changed a lot of like how I kind of saw my own labor. And I wondered, and it bothered me. I'm like, I see me as not a particularly like unique nonprofit worker. I feel like I there's this primed sector that like gets organizing, and it gets like caring and like integrity and the wanting to change the world for the better, and they're just not. It is sometimes, I guess, below the arithmetic that pencils out. And I am wagering, and I don't think it is a wager. I think it's proven itself true. That if like that we can raise like the standards in the sector and change the expectations, and that we can do it by like calling these like the values to question, like call the question, and what we're asking for, like none of the workers at the recently organized nonprofit shops are getting rich through a CWA contract. What they're getting is what they should have gotten, what every worker deserves, like fair treatment, just cause, my God, a predictable schedule, just basic stuff. And it's been absent for nonprofit workers for way too long. And I just, I think that it was sad to me. It was very sad to me when I could get so many union leaders that seemed to like kind of scoff at the idea of even like that it fell below a number, like an arbitrary number, would make something worth it or not. And to me, I'm like, you don't know what that worth it means. That could be a life-changing experience to be in a union, and that you're just writing them off because they're in a five-person shop. Like, yeah. I think that the labor movement loses so many people that it could be strengthened by immensely. And the nonprofit sector needs better standards. So it'll be mutually beneficial.
Thank you, AJ. Yeah. Did you have a follow-up, Amanda?
No.
Okay, because I want to interject here. I am aware of a community petition that's been launched by the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America Labor Working Group, which basically says demand that the management at Community Alliance of Tenants stop union busting, drop Baron Liebman. It's actually you can find it online at bit.ly, that's bit.ly/cat union busting. That's capital A, C, capital A, capital T, smaller case, lowercase union busting. So bit.ly slash cat union busting, and sign it. It says it's almost hundreds of people that have gotten on board, basically saying, you know, the Portland DSA labor group has launched this community petition after the severity of the union busting efforts being undertaken by management at the Community Alliance of Tenants. And it demands that public announcement that even while increasing staff size, CAT is committed to keeping the same percentage of CAT's workforce in the represented bargaining unit as had existed at the time when recognition was granted, and affirm that the CAT labor union is recognized and respected collective voice of CAT workers. And two, a public announcement of CAT's intention to reverse every so-called, quote, model policy, unquote, that was given. This is all part of their unilateral moves, you know, that are supposed to be subject to collective bargaining. And three, immediately terminate the relationship with the union busting firm, Baron Liebman, and apologize for involving CAT funds with an entity so dramatic, diametrically opposed to CAT's mission and membership, and publicly commit to bargaining in good faith. Speaking of CAT funds, I think that the word is that these union busters are being paid something like, you know, $380 an hour to manipulate this process. And as a CAT member myself, I'm outraged. Anyway, so moving moving back to our guests.
How can our listeners get in touch with you and keep updated on Clue's struggle?
So we have a Facebook page, and we have it's CAT Labor Union. That's okay. What it is, AJ?
Yeah, and the Instagram too is the same one.
CAT Labor Union, hit us up if you want to get to know us. We would like to get to know you, follow us. We're fighting for tenants' rights and worker rights.
Aside from the petition, are there any other actions going on or planned in the future that you can speak to?
There is,